KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
Of energy generation and power transmission projects in the Northwest. The FBI has arrested a suspect in a case involving the discovery of a pair of letters containing the deadly poison ricin in Spokane. The agency says investigators are working, quote, around the clock to address any remaining risks. Matthew Ryan Bouquet pleaded not guilty to mailing a threatening communication in a Spokane federal court yesterday afternoon. On May 14th, postal workers in Spokane intercepted a letter laced with ricin, a deadly poison, which was addressed to a federal district court judge. Bouquet remains in custody with a bail hearing set for next Tuesday. The only nuclear power plant in the Northwest is shut down for a refueling that takes place every 2 years. More than 1,300 temporary employees have been hired for the refueling and maintenance work at the Columbia Generating Station near Richland. The Energy Northwest plant generates enough electricity to supply a city the size of Seattle. Managers schedule the outage in the spring when hydroelectric dams are producing plenty of power for the Northwest. And the State Transportation Commission approved an increase in 520 floating bridge tolls to help fund the new bridge. The new peak rates will take effect on July the 1st, $3.70 for drivers with good-to-go accounts, $5.25 for those who pay by mail. This is KUOW News. I'm Jamala Henderson.
Support comes from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science, technology, and economics in the modern world.
Support for KUOW comes from Top 10 Toys.
52 degrees in Seattle, gray skies, expecting a high today around 60, partly sunny, chance of showers, also thunderstorms and hail possible this afternoon. Tonight's low around 48 with a 50-50 chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening. It's 9:06.
From 94.9 KUOW, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. Memorial Day is approaching. Time for everything from home repair projects to a little light reading. Roger Ferris and Nancy Pearl join us this hour with advice for you. Leaders of the Boy Scouts of America are gathered in Texas today for a historic vote. They're going to decide whether or not gay youths can participate in the Scouts. Joining us from near Dallas is former Washington Attorney General and gubernatorial candidate and Eagle Scout Rob McKenna. Thank you for taking time to speak with us.
You bet, Marcy. Thank you.
You're currently Executive Vice President of the Chief Seattle Council of the Boy Scouts of America, and you'll be part of the voting group in Dallas today?
That's right. The Chief Seattle Council, which covers the Olympic Peninsula and, or I should say the Northern Olympic Peninsula and King County, has five voting members of the nearly 300 councils that are in Dallas. So there are 1,400 voting members, and we're all down here to vote.
Do you have an official position as a council, or do you each get to vote your conscience?
No, we have an official position. The five voting members intend to vote in favor of the resolution, and that represents the views of the vast majority of our board.
I understand that sentiment around the country is almost pretty evenly split on this issue, and I wondered if it was a serious enough rift that it could officially divide the Scouts.
I don't think so. I think that everyone is committed to making this decision and moving on. I don't know how the vote's going to turn out. Everyone's voting by secret ballot, and we won't get the results until 3 p.m. Pacific time today. But I sincerely hope that the resolution is adopted, and I believe that the Scouting will move forward, and even those who are unhappy with that decision will continue to stay involved, because frankly, America needs Scouting, and the leaders of this program are very, very dedicated to it.
You've been on the record for at least a year supporting gay youth in the Scouts, so I'm assuming that when you make this vote with your council members, it's something that you personally support as well?
Very strongly. You know, I was in the Boy Scouts throughout my youth, and when I was in a troop back in the eighth grade as a 13-year-old, one of my best friends was a scout who was gay. He was a high school student, and we all knew he was gay. He didn't make a big secret of it, and we just didn't think it was a big deal. Even back in the 70s, the other Boy Scouts and I just looked at Steve as being a great scout and went on to be an Eagle Scout. And he's a great, great member of the community today. So there are a lot of us who have felt this policy should have been changed quite a while ago, and we've been moving in this direction. I've been working on it since shortly after I joined the board several years ago.
Now, there are some in the national scouting arena who would like to see gay adults included as well, and they're talking about as scout leaders, obviously, not as scouts. This particular proposal is specifically about gay youth participation, correct?
That's right. The question was divided, to use a parliamentary phrase. The other question about adult membership standards will be taken up later on, I think. I don't know the exact timing of that, but a decision was made to focus on the membership standards for youth and deal with that question because it is a distinct question. So that's what we're voting on today. And, you know, again, I sure hope it passes.
I know that at least one council in Connecticut has said that they plan to welcome adults and youth no matter what happens today. And I would assume in areas like Seattle that are maybe more liberal than other parts of the country that we do have broader participation by gay men and lesbians in the Scouts.
Yeah, that's true. And unfortunately, it occurs under a kind of don't ask, don't tell approach. And that just shouldn't be the case. I mean, we shouldn't have to follow a don't ask, don't tell rule for scouts or for adult leaders. But in councils like the Chief Seattle Council, that is the approach that's been taken, and that's why a lot of us think it's high time to move past that.
I understand it's secret ballot this afternoon, correct?
That's correct. I just went in and voted about 10 minutes ago, dropped my ballot off, and they'll tabulate the results this afternoon, and we'll get the results in about 6 hours from now.
Should the full membership or the voting members decide to lift the ban on gay youths, how soon could gay youth officially become Boy Scouts, those who are not already participating?
Well, I that's a good question. I don't know what the effective date is. I think it's quite soon. As far as I know, it takes effect as soon as the vote is ratified, but I'd have to check the rules to see if there's any kind of 30-day period like there is in the legislature. And as you point out, Marcy, there already are gay youth in scouting. There have been for a long, long time, probably throughout the history of scouting, for that matter. Like my friend Steve, or you know, I have another good friend whose son just finished his Eagle rank, and his son is gay. And, you know, it's been like that for a long time. We just have been operating on this don't ask, don't tell policy. And frankly, when the military finally got rid of their policy, which a lot of us also supported doing, especially me as a son of an Army officer, I thought it was high time. That really took away the last, remaining rationale. But for a long time, the scouts had said, well, what's good enough for the military is good enough for us. And that went away, and that really gave impetus to making the changes in scouting.
So it sounds as if you're pretty optimistic that this will pass.
Well, I you know, there's no way to count votes. So I'm optimistic because I really want this to happen. But it could go the other way. I just don't know how the votes are going to come down. So let's just say I'm cautiously optimistic because I don't actually have any data that can back that up. There's no polling. As a recovering politician, I still look at polling, but they it's just not available. So we're just going to have to keep our fingers crossed. Yesterday we had a big town hall meeting here at the conference. 1,400 voting members in the room, and people got up and spoke, and a significant majority got up and spoke in favor of the resolution of making the change, but. Again, that doesn't guarantee anything. Those folks were self-selected, but there were, and I have to say, the tenor of the conversation, the way everyone conducted themselves, was entirely respectful on both sides, and that made us all real proud of the Boy Scouts to hear the adult leaders get up and handle it in the best possible way. So, hopefully, that's a good sign. But again, we won't know until 5 o'clock today here in Texas, 3 o'clock Pacific time.
Rob McKenna, thanks for taking time to talk with us, and we'll be looking for the outcome of that vote.
You bet. We'll talk to you later, Marcy. Thank you.
You're welcome. Rob McKenna is former Washington State Attorney General, gubernatorial candidate, and an Eagle Scout. Leaders of the Boy Scouts of America are voting today on a proposal to allow gay youth to participate in the Scouts. And as you heard, they're expected to release results of that vote shortly after 3 p.m. Pacific time. This is Weekday.
Coming up at 9:30, home repair expert Roger Ferris takes your questions. Send yours in right now to weekday@kuow.org.
KUOW would like to thank Microsoft and its employees, the Real Networks Foundation, the Kongsgaard Goldman Foundation, the Cape Flattery Foundation, and our other corporate and private foundation contributors for their support of public radio and their commitment to building a vibrant community through corporate contributions and foundation grants.
Support for KUOW comes from Broadway at the Paramount, presenting Fela. With staging by choreographer Bill T. Jones, Fela celebrates the music and political activism of Nigerian musician Fela Kuti. Running May 28th through June 2nd at the Paramount Theater. Tickets and information at stgpresents.org.
52, overcast in Seattle's University District, expecting a high today near 60, partly sunny, chance of showers, possibly thunderstorms and hail this afternoon.
From KUOW Seattle, I'm Marcy Silman. The Memorial Day weekend's almost upon us. Maybe it is upon you if you're taking tomorrow off. It's a perfect time to catch up on reading. It's supposed to be cloudy and rainy. Or maybe you want to jumpstart your summer list, or maybe you don't have that list yet. So we have invited librarian Nancy Pearl in for a quick extra visit with a couple of reading recommendations for the weekend. And you've actually brought the books.
I did.
And you want to start with the beautiful hardcover book?
Yes. This is a brand new novel, a first novel by a young man named Brian Kimberling, and it's called Snapper. And really, you should just go look on Google Images and see the cover, because it's absolutely a delight.
There are, it looks like at least a half dozen different birds.
Yes. And very appropriately, because the main character of this book is a young man who...
I thought you were going to tell me a bird.
Not a bird. Has a job walking through the southern Indiana woodlands, finding birds' nests for the Department of Wildlife.
Wow.
And this is one of those the kind of new sort of thing that we're seeing in great proliferation, which is a collection of short stories that becomes a novel. And this does it a lot better than many do, partly because every one of the stories is told in the same voice, the voice of this young man who is discovering. It's about friendship. It's about love. It's about losing a loved one. It's about getting what you want and not getting what you want. It's about growing up, and it's written in just fabulous, fabulous prose. And I just wanted to read one little bit to give people a sense of this. So he's talking about, this is right at the beginning of the book, and he's comparing the Kentucky warbler to the oven bird. And he says, the Kentucky warbler is more sadistic. She doesn't feign injury, but she leads you away from the nest until you are ankle deep in mud or rattlesnakes or both. Hmm. The only way you will find her nest is if she shows you, and she won't show you if she knows you are there. It's like staking out the girls' shower block at summer camp. It can be done, but it takes skill.
Wow.
So you sort of see just how fabulous, what a great prose stylist he is. When I was thinking about how to talk about this book and what I wanted to say about it, it occurred to me that this is a book that explores the notion that in life you don't always get what you want, but the chances are you'll want what you end up getting.
The author is Brian Kimberling. This is a first novel called Snapper, told in a series of interlocking stories, yes, all through the same voice. That's sort of literary. Maybe the second book by Dan Simmons is also literary, but it doesn't have quite the same elegance.
Well, this is an old edition of Dan Simmons' novel, The Crook Factory, and it's just been reissued by Mulholland Books, which I'm so happy that they reissued it because my copy is pretty yellowed. I'm going to leave it here in case somebody would like
it. Okay, so what is this book about?
This book, Dan Simmons, let me just say, Dan Simmons is a fantastically talented writer, and in many of his books, he takes a real event or a real person and fabricates a novel around them. So one of his most recent ones is Drood, which is Charles Dickens
about
and Wilkie
Edwin
Collins.
Drood.
Yes, about Edwin Drood. So he does it just wonderfully well. He wrote a science fiction novel called Ilium, which is about the Iliad. The Crook Factory begins with the very real fact that in 1941, Ernest Hemingway approached the U.S. government and offered to set up a spy factory in Cuba,
really?
Outside Havana, where he was living.
Yes. This is true.
This is true. Yes.
Oh, my.
This is true. And Dan Simmons takes off from there. So it's not a book. Hemingway is, of course, a larger-than-life figure in the book, but the narrator is a young FBI agent named Joe Lucas, who is sent down to keep an eye on Hemingway without Hemingway knowing that Joe Lucas is has as deep a role in the U.S. intelligence as he does. And then what happened? I mean, Joe Lucas just thinks it's a joke. You know, Papa Hemingway, you know, as great spy. But then, in fact, they turn up some very real information that all these rival governments will want to know. So, you know, there are wonderful little cameos of other real people. Martha Gellhorn, mm-hmm, you know, who does not come across well in this book at all. Seemed to be a very unpleasant woman, although that's not the impression I got from my reading of her book, Travels with Myself and Another.
Well,
and Ian Fleming
is in this book,
is
too?
In this book because, of course, he worked for MI6 and William Stevenson, high up in the spy
world. Well, so when you take real characters and put them in a novel, is there, yesterday we were talking about Kindle Worlds, which is this new sort of fan fiction-y licensing thing. This is a little bit different. Do you owe anything as a writer to those real characters?
You know, that's a really interesting question. And I was thinking about that exact thing last night. Yes, I do think you do. I think you can play with the facts, but I think you have to in some ways keep their character true. And I'm not a Hemingway scholar and not even actually that big a fan of Hemingway, but from what I've read about him, that Dan Simmons has captured him just the way he captures Dickens and Wilkie Collins in Drood and Sir John Franklin in The Terror.
That's a really interesting niche in fiction to carve out for yourself.
It is.
It's to, you know, take real people, fictionalize them, and create a good story that's totally fabricated.
Exactly. And yes. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, Dan Simmons just carries it off with such adroitness. I mean, it's always amazing to read his books. And one of my favorites is called Hyperion, which is basically a retelling of the Canterbury Tales.
I actually have read that one. This book is by Dan Simmons, is called Crook Factory, like C-R-O-O-K, like a crook that you're pulling somebody with.
Or they're crooks.
Oh, those kinds of crooks.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
Yes.
The other book Nancy recommended is Snapper by Brian Kimberling, and we'll have them both. We'll tweet them out. You'll find them at Weekday on KUOW's Facebook page, on our website as well. This is a mini Nancy visit. She'll be back. We're adding this for the summer because it's time to read, if you don't already read. And if you're listening to Nancy, you're already a reader. But I have one last question before we let you go, which is traits of good summer books. What do you think?
You know, I'm not one of those people. The reading state of mind that I'm in now is I don't want heavy stuff. It's not summer. It's freezing outside, actually. But that's what we tend to think of summer books, that, you know, they're easily dispensable. I don't know. I hope my mood changes fast.
Well, you're about to go jaunting around. If you haven't yet, you're going to go on a long walk. Will you be able to have books with you besides guidebooks?
Probably on an e-reader, sadly.
Because you still sometimes like to hold the actual physical
book. All the time. I do not enjoy reading on an e-reader.
Nancy Pearl, as you know, is the author of Book Lust, More Book Lust, Book Lust to Go, Book Crush. She's a regular visitor here and on NPR's Morning Edition hosts the Seattle Channel show Book Lust with Nancy Pearl. And in 2 weeks, you're going to be back. We talked about memoir the last time you were here, so we thought we would talk about biography.
Good.
It's good that I let you know so you could think about it as you're walking around Lake Washington.
Yeah, right.
Thanks
for
joining us today. This is Weekday.
It's 926 KUOW 94.9. Did you go to prom? How was it? We want to hear your prom story. Send us an email at weekday@kuow.org. We'll talk about prom memories this morning at 10:15.
Support for KUOW comes from GET, Washington's guaranteed education tuition program, helping parents plan and save for college. With flexible options, a nationwide choice of colleges, and backed by the state of Washington. Information and enrollment online at get.wa.gov.
You can listen to your favorite shows anytime with KUOW podcasts. To find the one you want, just go to KUOW.org and click on View All Podcasts.
Support for KUOW comes from Emirates, offering daily nonstop service from Seattle to Dubai and on to over 130 destinations worldwide. More at emirates.com/USA. Fly Emirates. Hello tomorrow.
52 degrees. Today's high projected to be around 60, partly sunny, a chance of showers. Tonight's low around 48 with a 50-50 chance of showers and thunderstorms.
From 94.9 KUOW Seattle, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. Up till this week, the weather was dry and it was a great time to do some home repairs outside. And theoretically, the sun will shine again and the days are going to get lighter for the next month. So it's a good time for you to think about your home repair. And our home repair guru, Roger Ferris, is visiting us once again. And before we talk about the really fun stuff, we have to talk about Moore, Oklahoma, and the tornadoes that ripped through. One of our listeners said, can you even tornado-proof house? We've seen images of just massive devastation.
Right. Well, Marcy, I spent a lot of time in Oklahoma talking about this issue and working with people, encouraging them to invest in safe rooms or storm shelters. And it turns out that there's no such thing as tornado-proofing a home, but it still makes sense to build or rebuild or retrofit with connectors throughout the building so that if you're on the edge of a tornado, not right in the strongest winds, or if it's a smaller tornado, your house can stand up to it. So it makes all kinds of sense to use the coastal wind-resistant construction wherever you live, but especially in these places with straight-line winds and small, medium-sized tornadoes, or most people in the Moore area were on the edge of the severe wind. They weren't in the middle of it. So if their houses were built a bit stronger, they'd be just fine.
So when you talk about coastal regulations, you're talking about things that can withstand hurricanes.
Right. And that's the 125-mile-an-hour wind. And we have normal building techniques and codes now that can handle that, which is the majority of what people get hit with in a tornado. Now, the other thing, of course, that I was working on in Oklahoma was promotion of safe rooms and storm shelters. The shelters are often underground. The safe rooms are above ground, built like a vault, and, you know, they're somewhat expensive, but a worthwhile investment.
Well, you know, when people think about safe rooms, the image that has popped into my mind over and over again this week since the tornado is, you know, Auntie M and Dorothy going into that kind of root cellar thing. But I've heard in Oklahoma that they don't build a lot underground. So how do you build a safe room above ground when 200 mile an hour winds are heading your way?
Well, the FEMA invested in some engineering research to figure out the details that could survive that kind of wind and the debris that's flying through the air at those speeds. And they came up with a free publication that you can get at FEMA.gov in the FEMA library. And it's really quite detailed with blueprints for the different designs. Wow. And my favorite is actually one that results in a real bonus in your home. It's basically adding on to the master bedroom a little closet, or kind of even a medium-sized closet, like a little walk-in closet, that has its own foundation, and it's got super reinforced walls and roof, and it allows you to keep your clothes in there during, you know, 365 days a year. But if you ever need to go in during a severe storm, you just grab the pillows off your bed, go in, shut the door and lock it, and ride it out in your closet.
Wow.
But you can also convert a laundry room, a bathroom, some other part of the house.
So we're talking about a small physical space.
Yes.
So is it
jam in there?
Is it very expensive?
Well, it depends on the size and in what part of the house. They can be $5,000-$8,000, somewhere in that range. And you know, to save your life, I think it's well worth it. Especially in Tornado Alley. But, you know, it turns out tornadoes can hit pretty much devastating tornadoes anywhere east of the Rockies. So it's a large amount of area that is vulnerable. But that North Texas and Oklahoma are the most severe. They get the most. And now we've seen, you know, in 14 years ago, this happened in Moore, and mm-hmm. now it's happened again. So, you know, that kind of reinforces the message that this is not necessarily a once-in-a-lifetime event. So how do we assess the risk? You know, well, if you have a 1% annual chance for something bad happening, that means over, you know, 30 years, you have a 26% chance of something bad happening. And the life of a mortgage, you know, typically 30 years. So that's how we talk about risk for flood and sometimes for earthquake, for tornadoes, hurricanes, and all the rest, is what is the annual chance of something bad happening?
Are you going down to Oklahoma?
I've been wondering if the phone will ring. I'm a reservist, so I just have to wait and wonder and keep checking my phone. And I don't know. I would love to go. I'm actually participating with the Natural Hazard Mitigation Association in writing and reviewing a lot of materials and trying to stop some misinformation. So in the news, you'll hear someone who should know better say, well, nothing above ground is survivable with a 250-mile-an-hour wind. And that's not true. These properly designed and constructed storm shelters can be above ground, and they can be just fine. And many people have walked out and looked around and seen there's nothing else standing but their safe room or community shelter above ground, if it's built right, can do just fine.
Now, I have to say I grew up in the Midwest where tornadoes happened, and we had tornado drills in school. We were told to go down into our basements if we were home. And we were also told to open the south and west windows to depressurize our house. Before we went on the air, you told me that was another myth.
Yes. By letting the strong wind into the house, you make it more likely that the house will explode.
Wow.
And so keeping all the windows and the garage door closed and secured, and so this applies to hurricane force winds as well, is really important, which means with a garage door, you have to reinforce it because the typical garage door will fail and then let the wind in, and the house is pressurized and really just the roof gets blown off. So now the engineers say, no, do not go around opening windows. You mentioned basements. In Oklahoma, they do have some problems with clay soils, with water table issues, and so there are very few basements in those communities. But, you know, a lot of people have put in a small underground shelter. Sometimes they're made of fiberglass, sometimes concrete, sometimes steel. They're for sale at various vendors, and they just come in, dig a hole, drop it in the ground. And there have been lots of rebate programs in Oklahoma over the years so that thousands of people have had some financial assistance in purchasing these. But I always like to make the point, do not wait for a grant program or a rebate program for something to save your life. it's crazy. I mean, just like you would pay for a brake job on your car if your brakes weren't working, you need to, if you live in a place that's that vulnerable, you need to take action and not wait for a grant program because, you know, there's not enough money in the grants.
Roger Ferris is with us, and we watch from afar. Tornadoes are so rare here, although they have happened.
They have.
But if you have other home repair questions, you can certainly call right now at 1-800-289-5869 or 206-543-5869 or email us weekday@kuow.org. And Sherry says, Roger, it appears mold is gathering around one of my skylights, as well as in the tunnel leading from the skylight on the roof to the ceiling in the room. I'm wondering what kind of professional or professionals I should seek out to look at the problem to give me trustworthy advice on what's wrong. I assume there's a leak around the skylight. There's obviously something more than that going on.
Yeah, skylights are often leaky because getting the details exactly right to keep water out is tricky. You know, the cladding and flashing has to be done exactly right. And homemade skylights, they always leak. They just always
leak. They do. I have two of them.
Yeah.
Three of them, actually.
But there could also be condensation issues. A lot of moisture from the bath and kitchen areas that gets up in there, condenses on the underside of that skylight, and then kind of runs back down. That could cause mold and mildew. So, it's also possible that there is no leak and that what's required is some cleaning and some mold removal through cleaning. And then, there are some mildicides that you can add to paint. There are some special products available at boat stores and others, because boaters have a big problem with this, to help control mold.
Are there skylight experts if she wants somebody to come and look at these things? I mean, skylights are us?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No?
I mean, there probably are. You can find someone to come look at anything. But yeah, this is a kind of a funny topic because, I of course do recommend that you start out as a Sherlock Holmes investigator on your own. Get up there, take a really close look during a rainstorm, get up with a bright light and see if you can spot any leaks, but also be suspicious of condensation issues. And maybe you need a better bathroom fan. Maybe the skylight is in the bathroom, in which case it's certain to be drippy from the inside, not from the outside. And then, it's a matter of running the bathroom fan for a longer period, maybe with a timer, and doing a lot of maintenance of the paint up in there. It'll have to be cleaned and perhaps repainted from time to time.
Roger Ferris is with us answering your home repair questions and sometimes just your help. My house has a weird problem question. 206-543-5869. Jason in West Seattle says, our house has no yard. It's on a moderate slope with a large area of wild growth, blackberries, bushes. How big of a job is it to clear and level for a small yard? Can you suggest contractors? He can't suggest specific contractors. We don't do that.
Well, right. Although, the folks at the Well Home Program at the Fitty Neighborhood Center do try to keep a list of
Well, they can, but you just can't do it on the air.
I don't know. I haven't kept up anyway, so I wouldn't even know. But
you're out of the loop.
Out of the loop. And I do know that I don't want to do it because it's hard work. I did that in my backyard years ago. I brought in rock, and I lugged it back there and built a wall and added a bit of a pitch to it so it would never fail. And I built it kind of carefully, and then I leveled the yard and made it into a kind of an interesting little place and have a garden and some grass, and it looks great. And instead of being sloping and useless, but it was a huge amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did it all by hand with a shovel and a little wagon.
When was this?
Oh, I was younger. Yeah. And I remember the neighborhood kids wanted to help and they weren't much help. Because I had to worry about them crushing their fingers with these rocks.
Right.
But it was kind of fun. It was a project. But it's certainly doable. It's all, and a lot of people are realizing that having outdoor space that's level and usable is a good investment. And so some neighbors are doing that right now. I noticed a big truck parked in their driveway, and they've got people who are going in there and doing this.
Well, you could actually, theoretically, as opposed to doing this with a shovel in your little wagon, you could rent machinery that excavates.
If it's accessible, yeah, absolutely. That's the more sensible way, I guess. But I
think of all the exercise you got.
I got exercise. Also, I'm just chronically cheap. You know, I do it this way because it's free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had to pay for the rock, but that was pretty affordable.
I know that. I know that personality. Roger Ferris is with us, answering your gardening and home renovation, I suppose, hardscape. That's what you would call that,
sure,
right?
Sure. And of course, I'm no expert, but I love talking about it.
So there you have it. It's radio 206-543-KUOW. Cindy on Bainbridge, you're on the air.
I was calling because I have mice that are under my kitchen cabinets, and I can see where they're getting in, but I can't get to it.
Sure.
So I don't know what to do about that.
Well, I've gone to battle actually fairly recently on the East Coast with mice, and I've won. I won.
You won? What'd you do?
Glue traps at the hardware store. All the hardware stores have them. They have these glue traps, and they work very well. I put a little dab of peanut butter in the middle of the glue trap. Just a little, you know, penny-shaped or penny-sized dab or daub or whatever of peanut butter, and that attracts them. And they get stuck, and then there they are, stuck in the glue trap, and you can then kind of pick it up with a plastic bag, the way you would clean up after a dog, I guess, and dispose of the thing. So it's, you know, I think it's somewhat easier than spring traps, and I don't know. It's worked for me. I've caught a lot of them at my daughter's rental house, and they're all gone now. Finally got them all.
That makes sense to you, Cindy?
Well, I have a little bit of a problem with trapping them that way, and I'm wondering how I would get to the hole that they're getting into so that I can block that. Is there any suggestion for getting...
They can crawl through really amazingly small spaces, so they can come up along the pipes and wires that serve the fixtures. And under a cabinet, it might be difficult to find those little holes because you can't see under there very well or at all. From the basement or crawl space, you may be able to see where they're crawling along between the floor joists and along the little top plate of a wall, and you can see where they might be climbing up and getting into the cabinet area, and you might be able to seal that off. And I agree, you know, trapping these things is not much fun because there they are stuck to a glue trap or in a spring trap. They're dead, at least you hope so. There is live trapping, and you could do that. They have these little live traps, and you could take them somewhere and let them go. Somehow, you know, would appeal more to my grandchildren, I think, than the glue trap thing that I did. I have to say, a couple times after I put the glue traps in the garbage, I noticed that next time that I opened the garbage can, the mice had extracted themselves from the glue, and they seemed very happy in there. They were eating all kinds of food scraps running around in the garbage can. So, you know, I felt like, well, at least I didn't kill them, and they seem to be well-fed and pretty happy.
Good luck with that problem. It's not easy. Thank you for your call, Cindy. Same with finding out how raccoons get into attics. You know, and squirrels, they seem to be able to.
Oh, yeah. And if you block them one way, they'll find another way. They can chew their way through the wood.
Yeah.
I know they usually win in the battle of access. Now, I have had some luck with the deer spray that you can get at a hardware store. It's kind of a pepper spray, cayenne pepper in a can.
Okay.
And you squirt that around the holes, and it's very irritating to critters like squirrels and
mice,
and
too?
Mice and rats and things. Yeah. Mm. Works pretty well.
So you could try that, Cindy, if you can't. It sounds like she can't quite discern the hole, but good luck with that.
You know, you can also do my old technique of putting really loud, really annoying, there's certain AM radio stations that if you put in a space like attic or under the cabinets and turn it on really loud, the little critters just can't stand it. They can't stand the sound of those voices, and they'll leave, unless it's a rat, and then they'll just listen.
Is that true?
Well, I like that story anyway.
Roger Ferris is with us for the rest of the hour at 1-800-289-5869. Kate joins us from Vashon. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Hi, Kate.
This is Kate. Hey, Roger, I had my shower tiled about a year ago by a very skilled tile guy, and we're experiencing water that is leaking still next to the shower. We left a little window in the wallboard next to the shower and noticed some ants in there last winter, and we poisoned them and got them out of there, the little teeny ones. And subsequently, still moisture coming in, little what looks like soil formation in this little slot of wallboard that we left out right next to the tile. And just a little seepy moisture-looking thing there. And then looked eventually this winter on the exterior of the house and noticed that the boards on the exterior of the house right near the base of the shower were looking very rotted. Well, slightly rotted, but pushed into them and went, wow, there's water here.
Oh, yeah.
So we are trying to figure it out. We had a carpenter come in and replace all of the boards on the side of the house there. It's kind of the weather side of the house anyway. And he reached down into the rubber gasket, and he said, it's soaking wet. There's mushrooms growing down there. There's a big ant's nest. We got all of that stuff out of there. But the water problem isn't solved, and we're trying to figure out if we have to blast out the floor of the shower.
Right. Well, I have heard from professional installers of tiles and showers and shower pans and all the rest that even the best of them sometimes have a failure. And it's likely to fail if it's your very first do-it-yourself shower pan and tile attempt. But even the professionals, it's such a tricky job that they sometimes have a failure due to, you know, some little flaw in the system. And so that is very discouraging because, you know, the fix involves a sledgehammer and starting over. And it's just awful. But you do want to make sure that you're attacking the right problem, that there isn't some other source of this water. Sometimes that source can be a leaky pipe that is water supply rather than drain. And so the shower pan and tile work might be perfect, but this water is coming from something else. It can even be from a sewer vent pipe that goes up through the roof. And so you want to track down other possible sources before you tear up the shower.
So there is a bathroom directly above this one, another showered tiled bathtub above this one. I'm wondering if we should pull the wall board out above the tile work and see if there's water leaking down the pipes from the upstairs shower.
That kind of investigation makes a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, you can take out a fairly small piece of wallboard and patch it if you find nothing. But with a bright light, you could look in and you could have someone experimenting, putting in water just down the shower drain upstairs and then putting water on the walls and then putting water, you know, where it blasts onto the fixtures, the handles or whatever, and try to track it down. And if nothing happens then, try looking at the same thing during a heavy rainstorm and seeing if, in fact, water's coming in around the sewer flashing, that you know, the vent pipe that goes through the roof. Because all too often people, you know, get going on repair, but they're not attacking the right problem. So, yeah, you're right on target. You know, experiment, investigate, but don't just jump into a major overhaul, you know, when that might not solve the problem.
Good luck with that, Kate. Thanks for your call. We go now to Seattle's Beacon Hill. Eddie joins us. Hi, Eddie. Eddie?
Oh, hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. We live in Beacon Hill, and during the winter, we have old aluminum windows that are constantly sweating. And we're just wondering if there's a recommended way to deal with that, which, you know, it ends up mold on the surrounding paint and woodwork.
Right, right. Well, I had a rental house that had aluminum windows everywhere, and I finally decided to pull them out and put in modern, you know, double-pane vinyl windows, which were affordable. And once again, being very, very cheap, I did it all myself, and it worked out really well. But it was a lot of work, of course, because I had to modify the siding in order to fit these things in. So that's what took so much time. But it was very satisfying because it solved all those problems of the condensation and water dripping down. Another way to approach this, though, is to cut way back on the moisture in the house. So, you know, upgrading to a much more powerful bathroom fan, and some of them are powerful and yet quiet. So you look at the noise rating on them. And Same with kitchen fan, you know, make sure that you're getting the moisture out. And if you have, you know, any dampness in the basement or crawl space, you fix that problem as well by rerouting downspouts or doing whatever it takes. But sometimes by making your house dry, the interior air relatively dry, you eliminate most of the condensation and mold problems. So that's another, you know, possible way to go instead of replacing all your windows.
Have you ever heard of putting like a foam tape or any treatment around to create a barrier between the aluminum?
Well,
and the
storm windows are another way to keep your primary window warm and less likely to have condensation. So, you know, the modern windows that are metal and so forth have a little break, a little plastic kind of heat break so that the cold doesn't kind of get through to the inner part of the metal frame. But the old-fashioned ones, you know, don't have any such temperature break or whatever it's called. Thermal break, I think, is the technical term. I don't know any way that, you know, covering surfaces with kind of ugly foam tape would help very much. And it certainly would be unattractive. I mean, they do have those products at the hardware store, but they don't look good. I suppose, you know, they might be somewhat functional, but there's got to be a better way. And I guess, are you at all inclined to replace those windows?
That certainly is one option that we're thinking.
Yeah. Well, over the long haul, and it's many, many years, but they do pay for themselves in energy savings. And then for the rest of the life of the window, it's, as we say, all gravy. But having said that, it's so annoying when the seals go out on those fancy double glazed units because they get foggy and there you are, you know, having to do another expensive thing, whereas your nice old single-pane windows never do that. So I don't know. But you might look into storm windows, too, and it's possible to do, you know, build-it-yourself storm windows that are pretty cheap, and they make your primary windows warm and save a lot of energy.
Well, good luck with that problem, Eddie. You've got a few months before winter sets in again, or maybe a few weeks while we still have winter.
And it's so funny, you know, we're into the season of procrastination where you'll think, oh, I've got lots of time until next fall.
Do it now.
Yeah, so, you know, it gets put off, and then next year, oh, it's too late.
Yep. So now, well, maybe not right now because it's raining, I think. Bob in Seattle says, we've got a house with a low pitch roof that needs to be replaced. Assuming the job is done well, do you have a preference for a torch down surface or the rubbery PVC membrane? The estimates we've gotten for each are about the same price. And of course, each roofer espouses why their solution's better.
Yeah. Well, I've never put down the rubber membrane, but I understand from reading Fine Home Building that those products are really, really good. And that's what a lot of professionals are using. I did put down a torch down system on a low slope roof, and that was kind of exciting because you're actually using these huge weed burner type propane torches and passing them back and forth on the underside as you roll it out. And so
Yikes. You're
melting the underside as you install it. And I realized I needed help with that, so I had a friend help me, and we had two torches going. And at the end of the roof where we had to stop on about the second or third course, he kind of lifted the torch and pointed it at me, which was kind of interesting because I heard the little crackling of my hair and eyebrows. You notice I don't have any eyebrows?
Your eyebrows were burned off by a torch.
Well, I exaggerate, but but you do have to be careful up there. You can start a fire, and if you're having a professional do it, I'm sure it'll be just fine. I think that the rubber membrane probably has a longer life. I think the Torchdown is a great product, but I think, you know, after 20 years, and it's been 20 years now, I'm about due now to do it again.
So if his prices are the same and you're hearing that rubber membrane's the new latest thing, maybe he should go with that.
Maybe. I would read up a little bit more on it. I remember Fine Home Building had some great articles on that.
So check that out. And thanks for that email. Roger Ferris is with us. Everybody's named Bob today, but except for Sean in West Seattle. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Great.
Go ahead.
So I just I bought a house last year. It's a 1949. It had a old galvanized steel pipes, and it looks like the pipes probably need to go sooner than later. We're getting rust and stuff when we turn on the faucets sometimes.
Sure.
The guy who did the walkthrough when we first bought the house, the I guess appraiser or assessor or something, indicated that there's lots of options. I have been doing some online research and can't figure out, aside from price, if there's a real big benefit to copper over, you know, that new flex piping or like the CPVC.
Well, the CPVC has to be sloped so that it can be drained completely, and I guess, you know, you should set up all your supply lines that way. Copper is what I'm most familiar with, and I've done a lot of that, but people keep telling me that these kind of miracle flex materials have been improved to the point where they have really, really reliable fittings, and that the reinforced flexible tubing is reliable and very long lasting. And so you might want to look into that a little bit more, because I think it is much easier to kind of, especially in a remodel, to fish the flexible piping rather than to assemble either copper or rigid plastic, PVC plastic, in through all those little spaces. So there's more than one brand and type, but you could go to a real plumbing supply store where that's all they sell and talk to them about the advantages of each and get an education in that and learn all about it. But my understanding from people who've done a lot of that is that the technology is now very reliable and very, very good.
Good luck with that project, Sean. Babs in Bellevue, you had a mouse prevention recommendation?
Yes.
All right.
A friend of mine told me about this, and I thought that it was crazy, an old wives' tale, and she recommended spreading dryer sheets in the areas where I thought the mice were coming in, and I can't believe it. It's been 100% effective.
Oh, I love it. Thank you. That's great. Yeah, they are smelly, those dryer sheets. There's some chemical in them. And that's a little scary that would do it. But also, we didn't mention, you really have to keep all food in metal containers and sweep and vacuum and not have any crumbs for them to eat. If you eliminate the food supply, then they really can't live in your house.
I have an unrelated question, but related to Weekday, did you go to your high school prom?
No, I was pretty hopeless as a high school kid. You know, I was doing other things, and it didn't even occur to me.
In the next hour, we're asking people to send us their high school prom memories. But so many of our Weekday experts have not gone to the... I did not go to my high school prom either. Yeah. So we have to live vicariously, I guess, through listeners.
I never missed the whole thing either. You know, I just was having so much fun doing other kinds of things, really high adventure things. And some of them I can't even talk about. They're such high adventure.
We're going to leave it at that. But if you've got a high school prom story, you can email it to us, weekday@kuow.org. Roger Ferris is our home repair expert, director emeritus of the Finney Neighborhood Center's Well Home Program, also hazard mitigation, community education, and outreach supervisor for FEMA, perhaps on his way to Oklahoma.
Never know.
Thanks for stopping in to talk to us.
Thank you.
And now, the sound of the day. That's the sound of Raquel's almost 3-year-old son laughing when we asked him about the high school prom. No, when his mother gave him butterfly kisses. I love it. It's a really good laugh. What interesting sounds, laughing, crying, sobbing. What are you hearing in your world? Record 30 seconds of the sound and send it to us along with the story behind your sound. You can email the audio file to weekday@kuow.org and include sound of the day in the subject line. As I mentioned, we're talking about the high school prom coming up. We want to know about your experiences, maybe in the way past or maybe just recently. Email weekday@kuow.org, or in about 10 minutes, you can give us a call.
KUOW 94.9, news and information.
Who got a speeding ticket for going 12 miles an hour?
What is Culatello, and why are you going to eat it?
And why do Rockers Fits in the Tantrums want you to dress like this?
Shoulder pads, everybody. Shoulder pads.
For protection, I'm Brendan Francis Noonan.
And I'm Rico Galliano. All these questions answered, plus cocktail recipes and more, on this week's The Dinner Party Download.
The show that helps you win your dinner party.
You can hear that Saturday at noon on KUOW 94.9.
Support for KUOW comes from UW Medicine Stroke Center at Harborview Medical Center. The UW Medicine Stroke Center is dedicated to comprehensive care of stroke patients.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.